I'm Larry Morrow, and this is Take Two, the radio program that looks inside a person's adventure, not so much from the outside in, but the inside out. In the next 30 minutes, you will discover the inward joy of his heart that has married him to the passion of his life and the affirmation of ideals that has directed his success. And the person I'm speaking about, my very special guest today, is Bobby DiBiasio, now celebrating his 43rd year in Major League Baseball, but 42 years with our beloved Cleveland Indians. Bobby, hello, and it's good to see you again and talk with you, my friend.
Well, thank you for having me, Larry. Always a treat to connect with you, sir.
Now, Bobby, you serve as president of the Cleveland Indians Charities, managing director of the Greater Cleveland Sports Hall of Fame, honorary member of both the executive board of the Boys and Girls Club of Cleveland and the Cleveland Baseball Federation. You also serve as athletic advisory board of the Notre Dame College and a member of the board of directors. Actually, it goes on for another two pages. So I won't, because I don't want to waste that time, but I will probably touch on all of it from time to time. Now, Bobby, you're a Cleveland guy through and through, a product of Lakewood High School back to 1973, right?
Yes, sir.
Well, let's talk about that. Was also the year that you graduated was the year that I actually came and started to work on 1100. That's when I started to call Bobby DiBiasio for everything that I needed about the Indians. What was it now? Bobby, when you graduated from Lakewood, did you know that one day that you would go into be a communicator, go into communications?
Well, it's interesting. My father was a teacher and coach, spent close to 50 years in the Lakewood school system. I had two older brothers that went into education. I have an older brother, Dan, that's the current president at Ohio Northern University. The middle brother, Tony, was recently retired. He was the counseling psychologist, the Fairview School Systems, and is now an adjunct professor at Baldwin-Wallace. So I always thought maybe I'd be a teacher and a coach, but you know, my dad being a coach, my two brothers and I playing all sports. Sports was in our DNA. And as we'd sit around, believe it or not, Larry, at Ohio Wesleyan University as freshmen, we'd sit around and talk about what in the heck we were going to do with our lives. Friends of mine would say, well, I'm going to be an attorney. I want to start my own business. My dad's a dentist, so I'm going to be a dentist. And they'd look at me and I'd say, well, I'm going to be the PR man of the Cleveland Indians.
You know, and what? Then, of all the interviews that I've done with you, I did not know that.
Yeah. You know? So it was just something that I had put in my brain and my heart that, you know, sports and the Indians were so near and dear to me. I thought, well, I loved writing. So I researched, Larry, how do you become the PR man? Now, you got to remember, this is the early 70s, mid 70s. Right. So it was a fraternity. And so it was a male dominated profession. So I would reach out and research how did certain gentlemen become the PR person. And PR departments back then were only two people strong, maybe three mm-hmm. at the most. And it was all retired journalists who were sports writers who became later in their careers PR people. So therefore I said, well, I better get a journalism degree. So my dad said I had to have a teaching certificate to prove that I went to college. So so I had a degree in English, teaching certificate, and then a journalism degree as well. Went to Ohio State to get my master's in journalism. And through all this time, I was communicating with Harry Jones, legendary sports writer for the Plain mm-hmm. Dealer. Then he went on to television with Mudcat Grant, who sadly we just lost. Mud passed away recently. And I would communicate and tell Harry that I wanted to work for him someday. And all of a sudden, a phone call comes while I'm in Fremont, Ohio, as a sports writer, ready to cover a high school basketball game. I'll never forget it, on a Friday. And I get the phone call, and Harry Jones says, "Hey, are you still interested in working for us?" And so I went for interview, and been there ever since. Started in February of 1979, and have been living that dream ever since.
Now, there is a street sign at the corner of Bunce and Franklin proclaiming the intersection as Tony DiBiasio Square. Is it still there?
Well, it's not actually on the corner anymore because of the major construction to Lakewood High School. So what they did to continue to honor the memory and achievement of my father and his passion for Lakewood schools is, if you're familiar with Franklin Boulevard and Lakewood High School, the big auditorium has Johnny Appleseed on the front of the big auditorium. And there's a circular drive. So they named the circular drive off of Franklin Boulevard, Tony DiBiasio Way. And it is just remarkable. It for the school system to continue to remember our father, truly, he was passionate about each and every student that he came across. He was the senior class advisor for almost 25 years. He was a coach for decades. He ran the Learning Resource Center. You dealt with him with special events with WIXI 1260 and all the fun things that you were involved with. Oh, man. So, yes, thank you for remembering that. But it's truly an honor that the city of Lakewood and the education department wants to honor and continue to honor my father in that fashion.
You know, when I started to work at, it was called 3WE then, 1100, it is no longer that. But when I became the morning personality there, I remember calling you often because working on my morning show with me was Herb Score. Whenever I had a baseball question, I would chat with Herb. If it was basketball, it was Joe Tate. And you also had the wonderful opportunity of not only knowing her, but working with him. There has to be some great stories there, Bobby.
Herbie taught me some incredible life lessons about getting into the game of baseball and having a passion for it and having a passion for the Indians and wins and losses. How do you deal with wins and losses? He had this remarkable ability to, and he probably had it somewhere in his personality, but gained it through the game of baseball, that we truly have to move forward in life, that you really can't spend a whole lot of time looking backwards. We can learn from things that happened in the past, but it's so vitally important to move forward. And that's true in the game of baseball. You play 162 games, you're going to lose your share. You're going to lose probably at least 60, right, if you're even having a terrific season. So he taught me that right out of the box. And he was a guy that I would always go to when I had a question about dealing with players or dealing with the old grumpy newspaper guys. You know, again, I was 23, 24 when I became the PR director because Harry Jones retired 1 year after I was his assistant. And Gabe Paul one day walked by my office and just said, "Hey, kid, you're the new PR director. Have fun." And I'm 23, 24 years old running the PR department of a major league sports team. And I leaned on a number of people, Dwayne Kuiper being one of them, Herb Score being, I'm forever indebted to Herbie for all that he did to help me along with my early career.
You know, one of my wonderful memories of Dwayne Kuiper was, I believe that he was the captain at one time of the Indians, wasn't he? When he retired, yeah. I remember getting a call, probably from you, saying, "Larry, Dwayne would like to have you emcee his going away party," or whatever it was. And then at the end of it, he said, "Larry, are you getting paid anything for this tonight?" And I said, "No." He said, "Well, I'm going to pay you." And he gave me his jersey, and I still have it.
Wow. There was
no one like Dwayne Kuiper. I think he only had one home run.
Yeah, he hit a home run off Cleveland native Steve Stone. Guy went to Brush. Yeah, Steve Stone went to Brush High School and at Cleveland Stadium. He and one of the funny things, you know, he is regarded, he and Mike Krukow are a TV team in San Francisco, and they are considered the premier television duo in all of Major League Baseball. Kipes really carved himself an incredible place in broadcasting in Major League Baseball. And when we in interleague play made our first trip, the Indians make their first trip to San Francisco, the Giants had some fun. So they did a bobblehead of his only home run, him in a home run swing with a bobblehead. And I just thought that was such wonderful creativity. And Dwayne Kuiper, I have to correct you one. He was number 18.
Oh, number 18.
Yeah, yes. He had part of it right. He was number 18. And the thing that I will remember, and I thank him every time I talk to him, he put his arm around me, again, 23-year-old kid trying to navigate a major league clubhouse and how do you deal with athletes and the winning and losing and you know, players being sent down or released and all the things that a lot of people aren't aware of that happen inside a clubhouse. And early on, he put his arm around me. As you said, he was the captain of the baseball team, and he put his arm around me and said, "Hey, I'm going to watch out for you. I'm going to teach you how to navigate the clubhouse." And I don't know if I'm here talking to you four decades later, if people like Herbie and people like Dwayne Kuiper didn't take an interest in me.
Wow, isn't that wonderful? You're listening to Larry Morrow Take Two, and my very special guest today is Bobby DiBiasio, Senior Vice President of the Cleveland Indians. His duties include being team spokesperson, team ambassador, head of the Indians Alumni Association, and president of the Cleveland Indians Charities. Now, speaking of being team ambassador and spokesperson, you've had some interesting stories that I've heard you tell before that no one really knows other than you and those whom you have told. Some of them, at least one of them, was with Albert Bell. Another one was with CeCe Sabathia. Can we go back to the Albert Bell story first, Mr. Home Run Hitter, who everyone loved?
Yeah, Albert was such a interesting guy. Larry, I don't know if there was another athlete who outworked Albert Bell. The passion he had for hitting, the amount of work and effort he put in to be one of the most feared hitters in baseball, it was remarkable. I marveled at watching him do what he did in the batting cage. Just he would get to the ballpark an hour before most anybody else. And already be in the batting cage, especially at spring training, fully in a lather and a sweat while other guys are just coming in to have a little bit of breakfast before they got onto the field. But he also had a different side to him, that he had tunnel vision, that if you tried to penetrate that tunnel vision when he was at the ballpark in uniform, you got your head bit off. And He was a strong personality. My biggest unfortunate scenario with Albert dealt with one Halloween that I was hoping to get him on ESPN on a Halloween. He had his own candy bar, local candy company, Mally's Chocolates here in Cleveland. Did an Albert Bell bar, and it was very popular. So I called him up, you know, early afternoon on Halloween and asked him if he was handing out Albert Bell bars at his home for Halloween. And would it be okay if I sent a camera crew over to his house to get video of that? And I think I could possibly, you know, get that on ESPN Sports Center that night, that people would have some fun with that. And he said, "Well, no, I'm not handing out candy bars." And I said, "Oh, you're not going to be home." He says, "No, I'm going to be home." I said, "What do you mean you'll be home? You're not handing out candy?" He goes, "No." I said, "Do you sit in the dark so when kids come to the door?" He goes, "Well, yeah, I'm just not into it." And it ends up completely going 180 degrees, sadly, that, you know, some kids knew he was in the house, so they egged his house. They got it. Yeah, they got on their bicycles and took off, and he got in his car to go chase them because he was obviously mad that they egged his house. And his bumper hit the back tire of a young man in that story, and everybody was fine, but obviously inappropriate behavior. And so one thing led to another, where we could have had this wonderful, fun thing with him handing out Albert Bell bars, turned into a not so nice scenario. And it was just part of, you know, those kind of things just happen. You know,
now you get awakened from time to time when something different goes on with the Indians, and you're the guy that has to tell the story. So tell, as you told my John Carroll class, my MBA class at John Carroll, you told one of the funniest stories ever about CC Sabathia, whom we all know and loved.
Yeah. Love CC. As a matter of fact, he just wrote a book, that's, I think, coming out here early July. There was a documentary on CC, which blew me away because I really didn't know his alcohol issues. He hid them very well. And when he got to be a New York Yankee, they grew and grew. The demon of alcohol got to him. But the story was that, you know, he was out with his cousin and a number of other athletes in Cleveland, basketball players, a couple from Ohio State, one from Toledo, a CSU basketball player, and they were just playing cards. They'd rent out a hotel suite and they'd sit and play poker. And unfortunately, CeCe's cousin was a loser that night and decided he didn't have to pay. And so when they're leaving, CeCe's the guy that one of them pull a gun on. So CeCe did absolutely nothing wrong, but was there, wasn't even playing poker. He was just with his cousin. And so I'm, you know, in the elevator, somebody pulls a gun on CeCe and takes his earrings, his watch, his necklace as payment, because his the cousin didn't have the money. And you get the call at 4 a.m. from your colleague at the Cleveland police saying, hey, something transpired. Your guy's okay, but it's going to hit the news. Want you to be aware. And so my next first call is to our general manager at that time, John Hart. And we get on the horn to CeCe and bring him to the ballpark to learn all about it, get our internal investigators on it, and end up telling CeCe, look, at 4 o'clock, you're going to sit in our dugout and we're going to get all the media there. We're not going to announce that you're there. Just whoever is at the ballpark covering the game like they normally do will get this story. And, you know, it was tough because CeCe was, you know, a tremendous man. He had a passion for the Boys and Girls Clubs of Cleveland and African-American participation in baseball for the kids of Cleveland. And this sort of put a little bit of a dent on his image, even though he did nothing wrong. And, but those are the, you know, the phone rings at 4 a.m. You're like, oh boy, you know, who did what tonight, you know, this, you know, and, but that's all part of the business that we are in.
There's one other person that I'd like to talk about whom this town has loved for a long time. And it was Andre Thunder Thornton. Where did the Thunder come from? Did you create that in your office?
I did not create his nickname. I can't remember which writer created that, but you know, he was a prolific home run hitter. As a matter of fact, for those who love statistics and trivia, Andre Thornton hit more home runs in Cleveland Stadium than any other major league player. And that ballpark opened up in 1932, July 31st, 1932. Mel Harder faced the Philadelphia A's, Lefty Grove. Mel Harder lost 1-0. Another one of the greatest gentlemen's in baseball history and in Cleveland history is Mel Harder. Andre, a man of deep, deep faith. He was one of the go-to guys. You know, PR people have go-to guys. And Dwayne Kuiper was a go-to guy. And whenever we needed something on behalf of the organization or with a nonprofit agency, there were a select group of guys who just were willing to do whatever the organization needed. And Andre forever was absolutely a go-to guy. Again, a man of deep, deep faith.
You know, I could sit here and talk to you, as you well know, for hours, as you have done with my class at John Carroll. But I was touched by the fact that you told the story of there have been many owners of the Cleveland Indians whom you have loved, but nothing like the Dolans. Tell me about them, Bobby.
Their hearts are so large. They care about this community more than anybody knows. Never, ever, ever have they walked into City Hall or anywhere, and as owner of a baseball team, have ever uttered the words, "What can you do for me?" It's always the opposite. It's what can we do to make sure that our city is strong and vibrant? And that's how they approach everything, is service to others. You know, we talk about leadership in your class, and we've talked about Terry Francona and his incredible leadership skills of, you know, he's authentic. He's embraces individuality, and he's in service to others is part of his DNA. One of the key elements and skill sets, I believe, in leadership is service to others. And that's the way the Dolans are. Mr. Larry Dolan, mm-hmm. his wife, Eva, have done so much in the nonprofit sector. Paul Dolan's been on every major board, who now runs our franchise. Paul's been on every major board, from being the chair of the United Way campaign to the Great Lakes Science Center, to being on the Cleveland Clinic board, all of them, to make sure that our town is better than it was the day before. They are just such wonderful, wonderful people, and they're the longest tenured owners in our franchise history. And if you look at the record, I know what Sports Talk Radio says about them, which is just a lot of hogwash. But if you look at the record, they are stewards of some of the most successful. Right now, we're in the midst of eight straight years. And right now, with our record, as we talk today, we're still a winning record. And so mm-hmm. it'll be nine straight years that we have won a sustained winning culture that he creates with our baseball team. And the last 8 years, we've won more games than any other team in the American League combined. Only the Los Angeles Dodgers have won more games than the Cleveland Indians combined the last 8 years. The only thing is, we haven't crossed the finish line to get that World Series ring, but it's not because we haven't had an opportunity. They're just terrific people, and they create a culture where people are respectful, professional, and just want to do their ultimate to achieve success for them.
You know, we're speaking with Bobby DiBiasio, who's when you think of the Cleveland Indians, you might think of the owners of the Dolans, but those of us who've been around a long time think of, call Bobby DiBiasio. He'll get you what you want. Bobby, there's a lot of people listening right now, and they're going to say, "Larry, don't leave the interview without asking Bobby when we're going to get the name of the Indians changed."
Well, we're working on it. It's I could tell you, Larry, the complexities of changing your brand are absolutely enormous, as you can imagine, especially a brand you've had for over a century. Almost 2,000 names had been submitted from fans and media alike. Every one of them, if you can imagine, every single name was owned by somebody else. So the legalities of just that complexity has been great. So we're working towards it. We think it's the right thing to do. We know change is uncomfortable and confusing for many people. But the one thing we learned here, Larry, more importantly, was the fact that while none of us had the intent to demean a group of people with having the name Indians, intent is absolutely secondary to impact. Mm-hmm. And the impact of the name was real. And so we needed to step back and say, if we want to play a role in uniting our community and being a part of embracing diversity and equity and inclusion, and again, uniting our community, then our first step has to be a team name change. And we are working through all the complexities as we speak.
Well, Bobby, you've always been eager to pass it forward. And for those of us in the media, we all know there has never been, and most assuredly will never be, another Bobby DiBiasio. You have touched the hearts of this great community for four decades now, and I would think with more to come. Thank you, my friend. It's always a pleasure being with you. You know that.
Well, thank you, Larry. Yes, indeed. It's always a pleasure to connect. And thank you for having me. This was fun.
So until next time, do all the good you can to everyone you can, every time you can. For Take Two, I'm Larry Morrow.
So we'll do the Cleveland song for the Cleveland Indians.